Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Awakenings with Michelle Mache, the weekly dose of spiritual and metaphysical insights and information for navigating the soul path. During the show, if you would like to call in for a reading or with comments or questions, call 347-539-5122 and press 1 on the keypad, or join the Sacred Space of Empowerment live chat. Create a username by registering with Blog Talk Radio. It's great to connect with all of you here.
Hey, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Welcome to the program. I'm your host and co-pilot. Co-pilot with those in the chat room. Michelle Mache. And if you are just surfing the web and you found us, welcome. Welcome, guests. Welcome, long-time listeners, first-time listeners, and every week listeners. Wonderful to connect with everyone here. If you just happen to kind of find the program, which I get a lot of emails, people saying, oh my God, I just found you, scrolling through BTR or iTunes. I want to welcome you all and tell you a little bit about Awakenings. We are all things soul, all things about the soul, metaphysics, spirituality, psychology, transpersonal psychology, hypnotherapy, dream therapy, meditation, all things for self-development, spiritual development, and spiritual integration, and that's living more spirit-led. A couple of things like, what is spirituality? How does one become more spiritual? And in truth, we all are spiritual. We all are spirit. And it's just, how do we incorporate this in this human life, life on earth, so to speak? And I would say that my hashtag on my Instagram and some of my Facebook posts has been human in training, because it's my contention that being quote unquote spiritual is actually quite easy. To be of spirit is quite easy. It's the human part of us that's gets to be a little challenging. All right, if you have any questions or comments, the number is 347-539-5122. And that's, I'm going to put that in the chat, 347-539-5122, and press 1 on the keypad. And so got in a little late today, kind of under the gun. I started doing something else and then didn't realize. I'm like, oh my God, where is the time gone? So the chat will be appearing soon, and everyone can start getting in the chat room. So we have a great guest today, because I've been doing this soul entrepreneurship program. Some of you have been doing this with me, and it's amazing. You can go to soulentrepreneurship.life and find out more information about it. You can also email info@soulentrepreneurship.life. And, you know, many ways the playing field's getting level for everyone. You know, we see people, everyday people, people that perhaps didn't invest before in the stock market or trade are now doing that. More people starting their own businesses, their own companies or cottage industries as home businesses, additions to what they're doing, perhaps in the everyday or corporate world. And as it was taught to me or told to me probably around 2006 or so, the idea of cottage industries that and hybrid, what do I want to call it, hybrid positions or jobs, hybrid careers. And lo and behold, I love it. The universe sends what we need, because this is a good example for my soul entrepreneurship group, and everybody, actually everybody. So Bob Wheeler today is going to be the second half of the program, and he has created a hybrid career, which I love. His book is out, the recent book is called The Money Nerve, Navigating the Emotions of Money. I love this. His passion is to help others gain insight on why their emotions trigger financial decisions. And so he balances his background for helping others, taking a holistic approach and focusing on emotions, with being an accountant. So I absolutely love what this idea of what he's putting together. So I'm really excited to have him on at the second half of the program. And of course, you can also call in for questions there with him as well. And I used to do a lot of readings. I have just a few clients right now, but at one point I did a lot of work. NLP, hypnotherapy, my 5-step emotional clearing process. I did a lot of work with stockbrokers and traders and money market investors. And a lot of them would take a hit, you know, and it's hard to get back in when you've lost a lot of money. So I would work with them on processing and releasing the emotional charge so that they could trade again successfully instead of repeating in their mind the trauma of losing, you know, taking a big hit and losing a lot of money. But the thing is, we did have to look at emotions, and it was interesting because a lot of traders at the time didn't like to do that. But it's like, but something in your emotional state caused you to make this trade. And now you also have this emotional state from, you know, what you did or what happened in the market, a lot of times more likely. So emotions play a big role. One of my greatest teachers in that field, actually, Josie Kelly and her husband, late husband, Ray Kelly, who has a book called The Four Pillars of Successful Trading. One is knowing yourself, but also the one is to be emotionally neutral when you're doing things like that and when you're trading. And isn't that kind of like life? When you're making those big decisions, you need to get into that emotional neutral zone. All right, let us get to some callers. If we have time, I'm going to get to some questions, email questions from the listeners. I think we have some dream interpretations, some good questions. So, but let's start first with 267-285. Hi, you're on air.
Hi, hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great.
Hi, it's Kathy again.
Who is it?
Kathy.
Hey, Kathy, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Doing well.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I had my question. It's about me, but it's not about me. But it does involve me. Hopefully, that'll all make sense. The question is about my brother. He's been having some issues and things that have been going on with him. And he, as well as my family, have been expecting a lot from me to do with him. And I'm trying to figure out how to approach the situation or come from, because it's very exhausting. And
yes.
I'm trying to figure out how I can approach it. I don't know if there's anything that you can tell me or what you see, or I don't know. Hopefully is making sense.
Yeah. One of the things I definitely see is that this is a pattern of yours, and that this situation is bringing it out more to make it more testy, so you move on from it. And I feel like you can give some input and then just put it back to them and say, "Well, I know you'll know what to do, or I know you'll figure what needs to be done." You know, and I can only help so much in this. So part of what I feel is you getting off the phone, not getting drawn in the conversation in the first place. I feel, because I can hear you, like I can hear the calls, and I can hear you kind of thinking, "Oh God, I'm too tired. I can't do this," you know, or they're not listening and rolling the eyes up, or like, "I'm so tired. I don't want to have to talk right now."
Right.
So some of it is not responding. You know, this is what I always say lovingly to people, and even dear friends of mine and family. This is why we have voicemail. It doesn't mean you don't love somebody when you don't pick up, but it means that you love yourself, because you know maybe you're in the middle of something, or, you know, you're tired, or you're regrouping, maybe you're meditating. And I think there's a misnomer with the social media and everybody having a cell phone that to immediately pick up means that somebody's necessarily important, right? But it's not. You have to make yourself important. I feel like there was another instance of this, Kathy, that you kind of got in the middle of with your family. Is that true?
Just with my mother when she was living with me, and it was that whole thing. We helped her kind of find a place, and that was something that's been going for a long time. And you know, it's hard because it is family, and you get caught up in that mindset that, well, you know, they're your family. This is what you're supposed to do. But there are certain times where I'm just, you know, I can help, but I feel like I can only do but so much. But they're asking like so much more from me that I can do, and honestly, that I want to do.
You need to do that. You know, I'll tell you what.
It makes me selfish.
No, it makes you love yourself. It makes you have good self-care. See, one of the things that happens when we become the only rescuer, we don't allow others to grow and rescue themselves. And I'm going to share with you, because there's always one in every family. Sometimes the whole family is, you know, non-functioning or dysfunctional.
Right.
But usually if you're a light worker, you're placed in a wonderful little family that you try to save and rescue. And part of the path of the light worker is to realize that this gift needs to be opened to many more people. That it's actually not only not healthy, but it lowers your vibrational frequency, and it's really not doing good works. Because the people, usually in those kind of family dynamic situations, the people don't change. They don't grow. And so it becomes this unhealthy dynamic. Now, I do work with people that whole families. I work with husband, wife, their kids. You know, some are older, some are younger. And I'll tell you where those change is those people are using the tools and not rescuing. They're pointing out a couple things and they're handing it to that person, and then they're moving on. They're not staying micromanaging the situation. So what I would share with you was something that was shared with me many, many, many years ago, in one of my first long stint healing and counseling and all of that. Is one of my wonderful mentors said, why do you think that you can grow and change and somebody else can't on their own? And he said, everybody has a higher self.
Right.
So just
right.
The fact of think that you're the only one that can help them
right.
is actually crippling them.
Okay.
So yeah. So if you really want them to grow and make better choices and live healthier, you know, more productive, you can point a couple things out. You can point a book. You could say, well, this is what helped me, or I use this tool, or I went to counseling, or I went here, or I listened to this show, or I do this or that, and leave it. And let them find their way. Because, you know, like this one mentor told me, why do you think they can't find their way? And why have you become... See, the only reason we become somebody's way is because we don't think they can do it on their own. You know, and they might not think they can do it on their own in the beginning either, because they're not used to it. But we all were there at one point. We all didn't think we could do it on our own.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
So
right.
When you take on that role, you have to ask yourself, why? What are you gaining? You know right now what you're losing, but you're gaining something. And usually we're avoiding something in our own life. We're avoiding a decision, usually to go to do our own deeper inner work and go to our next level.
Okay. So in the midst of me making sure that I take care of myself, when they come to me, because that's the other thing that makes it hard, when they come to me, even when I'm not, you know, I might not be the one that's giving, you know, freely giving, and they're coming to me and they're expecting me to give, then I just have to be able to step back and say, okay, I give you this, and then just keep it.
Yeah, you have to, see, the thing is you're not the only one that does this. You know, we've been trained to do this, to mistake dysfunctional or abusive, non-healthy behavior to take that we wouldn't accept from a friend or co-worker to take it from a family member.
Yeah.
So we really can't. We really have to learn to have the same boundaries with love. And it's all about approach. I mean, you start kind of easy with the person, and then it gets, the boundary needs to get tighter, you know. So when they come to you, you know, I would, you know, what I learned and what I tell, you know, I use myself and I tell my clients that I work with is, you know, if you use yourself as an example, I will use myself as an example, saying, this is what helped me, or this is what I learned, you know, and then I got over such and such. I know you can too. And pointing them in the right direction. Because honestly, people, they don't change when you become the go-to person, unless you're empowering them to make the change,
okay.
to see the decision. And then they get strong, and then, hey, look at, you know, I'm this. And I know it's hard with family because a lot of times they'll kind of gang up on you, kind of, you know.
Right.
Or maybe, oh, well, you're not helping, and you're this and that. And can you give one example? You got an email question. What is Kathy talking about? So if you could, just one light example of what.
Well, my as far as my brother, he's been having issues. But he just found out that he has some mental issues and things, and he has been wanting me to get information for him because he has been in trouble, and he wants me to be able to let those people know that, you know, he's trying to get help and things like that. And I've tried to help in the past, and I've given them certain situations and advice on certain things.
And it didn't work.
Pretty
right?
much the
I
issue that he's had, it's been legal. It's been legal things and things that he's gotten himself in trouble with. And I've tried to go, you know, I'm contacting his probation officer. I'm doing like all these different things to try to help him. And then after a while, it's like, okay, you keep saying, well, you're my sister, this is what you're supposed to do, you should help me. But then when I help you, you do things to kind of counteract what I just helped you with, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, help me help you. I can't do everything. You can't expect me to do everything because you look at me as the older sister or the one that may have more resources or the more that maybe has more going for them than you feel that you do. So it becomes, and then I have to go through I have to hear the whole thing about how I'm selfish and how I'm this, and, you know, I'm the sister, and this is what I hear it from him, I hear it from my mom, I hear it from, you know what I mean, the whole guilt trip thing.
But here's the reason why people, usually most people that do, that kind of get in trouble constantly with the law, or it's because, it's not because they are, have been accountable in their life, unfortunately. It's because people have been behind them with the pooper scooper cleaning up their problems. And so you can't, see, he has no vested interest in changing and growing up.
Right.
So what's happening, you guys are enabling him to stay a victim and a martyr. And there are places where you can, for a nominal fee or free, he can get legal help. So if I was you, I would probably just give him that information and say, hey, how did it work me helping you before? You can do it. You know, you're strong. You know, I made changes in my life. I trust that you can too. You're just as able as I am. But the thing with you is you got to don't get pulled in by the guilties because they're doing a mental manipulation on you. You know, they just want to, he doesn't want to do it. He obviously, and it gets easier with time, each situation. If you look at, here's a really thing, a healthy thing we learn in counseling work with working with family dynamics and, you know, inner child issues. When you see an adult acting like this, think of them anywhere from 2 to 8, and maybe some might be early teenage years. And what would you do? How would you help your own child that was going through this?
Right. Okay.
You know, if you have your child, you're not going to keep enabling them. You're going to say, look, I love you very much, but I want you to be successful in the world, and you're not going to be able to be successful if you don't learn to handle some of your own responsibilities or follow through on your own. You know,
right.
Unfortunately, I feel there's a lifelong of this.
Yes.
So you're going to have to, you know, and I would say, Kathy, when you have a discussion with him or your other family members and they're saying, oh, you're selfish or you don't care, you're supposed to do this, what I would suggest doing is setting up a time to talk to, you know, one of your friends or listen to, you know, one of the archives or, you know, go somewhere where there's some positivity and some reinforcement for you.
Okay.
After you've had, I would say before and after. So when you call, you know, when it's called or if they're just coming over, which I would set a boundary of that too, but, you know, don't just be popping over,
right.
Call first. But I feel for you, you're being tested. I really do. I feel like there's a next level that you're wanting to go to. You're wanting more fulfillment in your life. And in order to have that, you're going to have to give up some of these patterns.
Okay.
Does that,
okay.
Because really, how can you have a healthy, significant other relationship with your child, and most importantly with yourself, take care of yourself, and go to that next level that you want to do.
Right.
Learn and grow, and then take care of him or other family members on top of that.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Can you? I mean. It's a little.
I don't think I could.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even do it. It's a little.
Yeah, when I look at it that way, the way that you said it, I wouldn't be able to because I would be too focused or being allowing myself to be pulled back to be focused on whatever is going on with them, but which has nothing to do with me.
Right, and it depletes you. And here is the thing: you even said he didn't really listen. It doesn't work.
Right.
And. You can't control what he's going to do, and there's no exchange for you. See, every relationship to be healthy has to have an exchange. There has to be some kind of energetic exchange, you know, comparable. It's not something really that we can, you know, quantify, but you can feel it, you know, and
one way in the world
we do it is monetarily, or I'll help you do this and you help me do that. There has to be something that you're receiving, you know, like fulfillment or wow. Like me, you know, me, like when people call in or I get emails, I go, wow, people are getting it. I'm so fulfilled. Otherwise, I wouldn't do the show, you know, but there's this feedback. There's a synergy that happens. If you're in a relationship where there's very little of that or none, it's actually self-abusive. Because you're not only draining yourself, but you're putting yourself in, you know, kind of ill mental, emotional health. And then, you know, your spirit's kind of lagging.
Okay.
You know, I'll share with you really quickly, and this is good for other people that are listening as well, and then we'll move on. But I have one brother, a dear, 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 I love immensely. I'm just like a big sis, and he would always come with these issues. A lot of it was business or some interpersonal. And years ago, I used to spend an inordinate amount of time on the phone with him, and or we'd meet for lunch, and I'd show the books, and I'd talk to him about this and that, and he would go on and on and on and on, and he would do the opposite, and he just. You know, I was like, what are you doing? You know, even one big mistake or a business, I said, you need to get out of this. These people are going to, you know, I tuned in psychic. I said, you know, they're probably going to take advantage of you. You know, which ended up happening.
Right.
But I finally learned through my own introspection and my own, you know, counseling and, you know, really finally listening to what I tell other people, basically, that this is not helping, and he's not gonna do what I want anyway. See, these people just want a sounding board, but they're not interested in changing. But he did start changing when I did. Guess what? He would start to talk, and I would say, because he would mention, and I said, well, sounds like you got a good handle on it, or, you know, or I would suggest a couple things. And then, you know, he would keep talking, really wouldn't listen. I would bring, this is one thing I think you should do too, I would bring the conversation back to me, like, wow, I'm really tired, I've got all these projects on, I've been doing this, I've been doing that. Because, see, you have to assert yourself in the relationship. So okay. I would keep doing that. I would just acknowledge him. I would bring it back to, you know, I would say, well, I know, I trust you. You'll get it. You'll get a handle on it. Or, you know, I suggest this, that, you know, one thing he did do, I gave him a diet to reduce his, he no longer has diabetes. So he did listen with that because another doctor had told him the exact same thing I told him. But anyway.
Right.
Right. You know, and I was like, I told you, you didn't need to go, you know, and he's like, oh, I can't believe it. It's gone now. But, you know, da, 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 da.
Right.
And then one day he says to me, why do you not tell me anything anymore? And I said, listen, because you don't listen to me anyway. And I said, and by the way, you going to do what you want to do, and you have your own life, your own higher self. So use it. You know, you can change, you can empower and change yourself just as much as I have and do. I said, you're very capable and confident and that was it. And now we talk. I can go to him with issues or problems and ask his advice. I actually allowed him to grow up by inserting myself more in the conversation to get my needs met, get listened to, heard, acknowledged, and understood, so that I became a real person, not just this sounding board. And I handed stuff back to him. You know, so I actually and he gives some pretty good advice. You know, he's married now, and so. It always goes back to us. We have to ask, why are we doing this? Why are we keeping ourselves in this kind of, you know, codependent mush? You know?
Okay. Right. Okay. All right.
That's all?
I get it. Yes,
good.
It does.
Another great, by the way, one of my clients, Ann Brown, a great book, How to Develop a Backbone. Goes through all kinds of examples, especially with family. Yeah, it's a pretty kick-ass book, easy read, and really gets into this kind of stuff. Because we're not taught, we're actually, most of us growing up are taught to dim our light and be codependent, and not to have, which means not having individual needs. You know, I mean, that's the biggest thing I see that really kind of ruins families. Is they don't allow individual members to have their own needs and wants, basically to be a unique being. And yeah, so that's, you know, and then think about your child. You don't want to raise her with this, because if you're doing this pattern, I can guarantee it will be passed on.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. This was great. I know this question helped a lot of people because a lot of people go through this.
Yeah.
You know, it's huge.
It's a big one. It really is a big one. And especially, I mean, any relationship is really big, but it's always the interpersonal ones that make it even more, you know, difficult.
And, you know, people ask me all the time, well, you know, why does this happen, you know, mostly with, you know, family members? And you'll see it in other parts of people's lives as well. But it's always more pronounced with the family members because it's less filtered. You know, the boundaries aren't as clear there. You know, it's hard to escape. It's hard to get away. You know, it's hard to say no. And especially when they kind of do the ganging up. But what I want you to do, I want you to practice this, you know, throughout the week, and then let us know next week how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Muster yourself up first before you talk to them with some meditation, a little yoga or spiritual book, I don't care, 5-10 minutes, something, so that you're connected, you know. Do that alignment meditation, you know, focus meditation. And then after, do the same thing after talking with them, after having an experience, so that you're moving more and more and staying more and more in the truth. You know, because you, right now what's happening is you're believing the lie that there's something wrong with you for caring about yourself. And you know, when actually you're not, you're trying to empower yourself and him and your family members by taking responsibility.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. It's a muscle they got to use. Yeah. They got to work that muscle.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
As always.
Yeah. Big hug. Thanks for sharing as well.
Thank you for listening and helping.
Wow. That, I'm so glad she brought that up. I know that's helped a lot of people because, you know, one time or another, we all go through this, you know, and whether it's saying, well, I'm a mother, I got to do this for my kids or my husband, or I'm a sister, or I'm a brother, I'm an uncle, an aunt, I'm a priest, I'm a minister, I'm a healer, I got to heal everybody. But we have to think about ourselves as well. We have to think about our own sacred life as well. And that's, I call that centered in self or self-centered. There is a healthy selfishness. There is a healthy centered in self, centered in our true self, you know, in our essence and what we need. All right, everybody. I do see callers on the line. The number is 347-539-5122 and press 1 on the keypad. And now we're going to get to 646-796. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Michelle. It's Tasha. How are you?
Hey, great. How are you?
Good. Michelle, in my meditation, it's coming in really heavy in reference to like money and energy. And so now it's like the whole contemplation. In reference to like, I realize that I give out a lot of energy in the sense of like I'm having a lot of activities, etc. But also with my money, I haven't been managing my money well. And now I'm starting to look at the relationship between the two. So for example, with money, I'm basically right now living check to check, which I don't want to do anymore. So that's part of the evaluation.
Okay.
And then the second part is in reference to like last check, I spent a little bit more in an area with my wants in reference to what I needed to put in. And then I did have the money to pay it off, but it's still kind of like I was supposed to get paid, but there was miscommunication. And so they had to mail me my check. I didn't get it in my hand. And it's still floating in the mail. So it's like money is there, but I don't have it in my hand. And now I'm trying to evaluate, like, what is the connection between that and my energy? I don't know if it makes sense.
Well, and that's really interesting because they do kind of go, they're very similar. You know, money is a form of energy. And as you know, we've been talking about this, everything is energy and based on energetic principles. So there's a couple things. Sometimes when we're bridging, now I hear something in the background. Where are you at?
In the park.
Oh, you're in a park. Okay. Sounds like a horn. So sometimes when we're bridging or we're learning something new or we're integrating a new piece into our what we're doing into our career or life, there can be more energy going out that's coming back in the form of the monetary. So one thing that helps you shift and actually up your vibrational frequency and shift your understanding or viewpoint is to not just see money as the only viable energy source or way of receiving, okay? You there, Tasha?
Yes, I am. I have you on mute.
Oh, good. Okay. So when you look, and what I would suggest is taking little kind of contemplation meditations, little inventories, and actually breathe it in. Like, oh, I met this person. Oh, I got my website built from this. Oh, I got this connection. And actually take in the things that you've now been receiving, whether they're people, insights, connections, new experiences. And you want to do that for a while. I mean, a few days to about a week, you know, and then what you want to start doing is then saying, now I'd like also, I love this, thank you, kind of feel the appreciation, the gratitude, and say, now I also want this energy to come in on a monetary level. I now want it to come in on a money level. And then actually envision the money, you know, in your mind and feel it. Feel it coming in. I'm doing it right now. You know, how many kind of dollars? The reason that we, that you, I suggest people to do it this way, and it works. It always works. Oh, one other thing, and then I'm going to go back to why it works. The other thing that I always find very important, and I really opened to a lot of abundance when I started doing this, is to say whatever it is, this person or this client or this job or this career, is not my source in supply. I'm connected to the infinite source or a infinite source and supply. I always say God is my source. God is my supply. You can say the universe, the all that is, whatever terminology you're comfortable with. The reason being is when we thank certain people, and I did this a lot with my clients that work, you know, they're in service working with clients. And they'll, oh my God, so-and-so, oh God, this is not, oh, this client's gone, oh, what am I going to do? And I said, they're not your source, they're not your supply, you know, and they said, oh, but they paid it, you know, da, da, da. And I had this commission with them, and now that's gone. And I'm like, because if you say, whether it's love or anything, the love, the abundance, the money, the good times flows through people to us. So it's the universe, though. It's showing up in that particular job or person. But that's, you know, it's showing up as them. But beyond that, it's the all that is. It's the universe. It's God. It's so saying that this, you know, making sure that you know that you're connected to the infinite supply will help. You know, not only it'll help raise your vibrational frequency, and it'll help widen your viewpoint. And going back to why this works to appreciate is because when I see that the world, the universe is abundant, and that there's always, I'm always receiving what I need. I'm always receiving the good. I'm always receiving, my needs are met. When I see that, wow, I met this person, and then wow, I had this great conversation, or now I have this new insight, or I'm more empowered. When I start seeing that all as energy and valuable, just as valuable as money, then now I'm more energized. I am more, I'm my electromagnetic beingness, I'm going to call it, is balanced, and I'm buzzing. So I'm more alive. I am more alive. And therefore, when we're more alive, when we're more animated, taking up more space in the universe and the world, more comes to us. And then, of course, we put in the request. Okay, all this is good, so I don't negate it. Because if I say I'm not receiving enough, I'm not getting enough, then I'm coming from lack. So it's hard to attract abundance from lack. It's a different vibrational, you know, it's just hard. It's a different vibrational frequency. And it doesn't have much oomph. You know, it has the oomph to keep you stuck and boxed in. So if I can say I'm drawing this in, now I want it in the form of money. Tasha, thoughts?
Yes. I think also excellent. Thank you, Michelle, because it does have to do with the frequency. But I do feel that I have enough coming. I'm not going to say enough, because I could always use more, but I'm just going to, like, if I was to allocate it a little bit better, I think I would have, like, let's say savings, and then I could be building on that. I think my question also has to do with the fact of if I have sufficient coming in at this point, I'm grateful for it, but I'm just using it in a way where I realize that I do the same thing with my energy. Like, for example, I have been using my phone a lot, and I realize I haven't been spending enough time, literally, like, in activity with my son. And so it's kind of like, does it have to do with me organizing and myself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, see, here's the thing. We all do little boo-boos. So sometimes we realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't have bought this or that or done this or that, or I should put 10% away, you know. I suggest to people, a lot of times people say, well, you know, that's easy for you to say. I can't. I have this expense. Again, it's not the amount, it's the idea of doing it. I would tell people, I don't care, start with $10 a week, $5 a week. It's just that you feel that part is taken care of. Obviously, if you can do more, do more. But I would say start with the minimum of something and then just make it a habit, you know, that you're putting that money aside. And I usually say have like three, if you can, and again, it's not the amount of money, but it's the idea. You can have an account that you don't touch or hardly ever touch, and then you can have one that's attached to your checking account, a savings to the checking that's a, you know, just in case I go over, just in case I need something, but I don't really need to go there, you know, but it's there. And then one that you don't touch at all, you know, whether you want to do CD bills or savings or something. But the thing is to have those safeguards, but to also know that you're learning. Now you're learning, you're seeing where do I need to manage. And again, it's also managing our energy, not just money, but where do we put our time? Are we putting our time into things that are not bringing enough back to us, or, you know, again, are we hiding or escaping something? Especially when we're going to our next level, you know, a lot of us are, and I've been talking about this a lot. Sometimes you put energy, a lot of energy, in one thing over another. And I think you have to also ask yourself, is it an investment? Is it coming back to me? Is it something that I need? You know? You have to weigh it out energetically. You have to weigh it out energetically.
It makes sense. Thank you, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank
the last call helped with it.
The last call helped you as well?
Yes. I feel like
that was a good... Well, it is with the energy, because if you're putting energy into stuff and not enough is coming back, oh, yeah. And by the way, that will affect your money flows. When you get caught up and drunk, because emotional energy in motion, which is energy in motion, so emotions are energy, are on the same carrier wave or bandwidth as money. This is why you see people using money to either manipulate or control. Sometimes people, or, you know, people that aren't, say they're not receiving enough, you know, you can see in their life, they're not receiving enough, not just financially, but emotionally. I've seen this too. People, now, I'm probably going to get emails on this, but people that are usually stingy with their money are stingy with their emotions. People that are generous with their money giving, and I don't mean necessarily frivolous, but that are willing to give or share and help somebody, are usually, you know, generous emotionally as well. So there's this direct correlation. This is for anybody dating as well. Because you can see what you're going to end up with emotionally by how giving somebody is on both ends, you know.
I agree.
Have you ever noticed that?
Definitely with my mom and her husband. Like, he's very frugal with his money, but he does the same thing emotionally with her. And with me, so he's been in my life over 30 years, and I still don't have an emotional connection with him. So, yeah, so I've seen
It's really interesting. I have never, and I'm open for to be a different experience, but I have never met somebody that's overly frugal or stingy. I'm going to say stingy financially, stingy with their money, that's not stingy emotionally. It's on that same polarity plane, same carrier wave, because it's all energy, you know, and... or people that think, oh, the world is not, you know, it's a hard place, or it's hard to make money. Those people usually are kind of counting every little, you know, whatever emotionally, every little emotional gesture. So I find it interesting that we had all these questions about energy and money, and then we have somebody coming on. Our guest works specifically with that.
That's
great. Yeah, because really, you know, you can tell a lot, you know, again, clearing up emotionally, not having the emotional drain, not having the emotional drama does up your bank account. So those of you that are going, oh, I'm having struggling, I bet you, I'll make a bet, $5, I'm not a big better, that you've got over drama in your life, you know. I cut it with people. I will say, even my significant other or family members, I will say, look, this is getting too, if you're not handling this, you're going to process over there on your own, because this will cut into my business. I've seen it. This will cut into my life, my livelihood, my health, and I can't take this on. So I think when people start making, it's not about, it's being there for people, but understanding how to be there for people, where they're, we're allowing them to be empowered.
That makes sense. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you so much. What a great, great call. Okay. Time for our awakened, guest. And those of you, I did get some dream interpretation questions that people wanted, and email questions, a couple readings. I think I had like three dream interpretation questions, maybe more. I will definitely be getting to those next week. You can always count on, usually within the next week or two, I'm able to get to what we're sharing. Thank you, Tamara, in the chat. Really great stuff being shared. I think so as well. Okay, so our next part of the program, our Awakening Conversation this week, is with Bob Wheeler, who offers a simple and effective method for creating a healthy relationship with money. His crusade for holistic personal growth has cross-pollinated with his accounting practice to deliver a new approach to personal finances. And what Bob likes to do is explore the emotions surrounding financial decisions. He does this so aptly with his latest book called The Money Nerve, Navigating the Emotions of Money. I want to welcome to the program, Bob Wheeler. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, how are you? Glad to be here.
Oh, I am so great. I mean, I'm so happy to have you on the program. We've got people in the chat saying hi as well. And it's so apropos, I think, to what so many people are going through right now with the idea of, you know, money as energy, the relationship, why don't I have enough money? How do I manage my money? You know, what does money mean to me? I think a lot of people are waking up to that. And I think that your book is phenomenal in pointing out the emotional aspect of this. So before we dive a little bit into that, I'd love to get your take on, if you will, or your experience with your, I want to say, your first awakening. How did you awaken to this is what you wanted to do with your life to help others?
Well, what happened for me was basically I was going through my own journey of why was I self-sabotaging, because I was aware that here I was the CPA with a license and a title, and I was always financially broke. And I was looking at people that were making technically less money than me or had lesser jobs, and they were excelling. And I had to really say, okay, wait a minute. There's something going on with me because I'm doing the self-sabotage. So I started really looking at that and really tracing back where I picked up some early messages, and I said, oh, I'm making a decision. Absolutely not going to happen. And then what happened is, as I was doing a lot of tax appointments, they were turning into therapy sessions because people were pouring out their heart and soul to me. And I realized, oh my gosh, everybody thinks they were supposed to have gotten this download, and everybody's beating themselves up. Nobody talks about their money issues, really, because there's such a shame attached to not being more than. And so I really had this, I had this conversation with a friend of mine. She was breaking down in tears because her family told her how stupid she was, because she wasn't making the right choices, like all of her siblings who were doctors. And I realized I've got to get people talking, start this conversation about the emotional impact of money, because everybody pretends like it's black and white. And the reality is there's so much money and energy around money because it's a part of our daily lives.
That's so true. And I'd love, I got to tell you, because I just had this discussion last Saturday. I've been doing this, facilitating this group called Soul Entrepreneurship, and helping people go on. And I was talking about, with something that I learned back in like 2006, how the next wave, and to be really successful, is to have these hybrid positions or hybrid careers. And I was looking at your bio, and you actually used that word, or my assistant did. I don't know if it was you, but that you actually merged the idea of taking the emotional component or counseling mm-hmm. With the accounting or money management. And I thought, oh, my God, what a great example of this.
Yep. Well, you know, there, and I'll tell you the reason that that happened was because I would sit down with clients, go through very logical scenarios, and then they would make mm-hmm. a completely abstract decision. And I'm like, why are you doing this? I gave you all the great information. Once I realized that it doesn't matter how logical you are with stuff, if people have emotional attachments or an unconscious desire to self-sabotage, they're not going to make the logical choice. And so I had to start figuring out where was my client emotionally so that I could then reach them to make the decision that I wanted them to make, but with an understanding of where they were blocking themselves or withholding.
Oh, my God, Bob, that is so powerful. Oh, my God. I don't know why that – and just you talking about it, I mean, two of the hottest buttons, I think, other than sex and religion, is emotions and money. You know, money, it's like
– Absolutely.
And, right? And that nobody talks about usually any of those. It's like a, you know, mind going off.
That's exactly it. And, you know, I was listening to you talk to the previous caller, and – and it's, you know, to me, money is just the doorway on how we live our lives, right? It's a reflection of our emotions. It's a reflection of where do we withhold, where do we hide, where do we keep secrets.
Ah.
And when I pull people together in groups, when I do workshops, the one thing that I hear at the end of the workshop is everybody saying, I've never spoken about this publicly. I've never admitted that I sneak Snicker bars, or I don't tell my spouse about certain things, or I've never admitted that I have credit card debt. I had a client who hadn't told his wife that he had accidentally gotten a credit card up to $8,000, and he didn't know how to tell her, and he'd been keeping it secret for a couple of years. So it frees people up to be able to say, yeah, sometimes I put things on my credit card even when I don't have money. Or, yes, sometimes I bounce a check. Or, gee, my credit isn't stellar, right? Because we keep it all a secret that, oh, my God, I have the best. I'm better than you. I'm making better financial decisions than you. That's what we put out there. And then the truth is we hope nobody finds out.
Yeah. Now, why do you feel that goes on? Because that's interesting. I've seen that a lot with spouses. But I didn't realize it was like so invasive, like the Snicker bar. I didn't, you know, food, and I didn't realize that this was such an indicator that impacted.
Well, you know, yeah, it's well. You know, here's the thing. So if we're young, and mm-hmm. we hear mom ask dad for some money to go shopping, and he starts screaming at her, then we know, gee, if you ask for money, there's conflict, right? Or if mm-hmm. we see the parents fighting all the time about the way money gets spent, then we know that having conversations about money is just, it's going to be conflict. There's going to be fights.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to not mm-hmm. discuss it. Or we see, you know, parents saying, here's lots of money, just go and do something and just don't bother me. Oh, okay, so money is a substitute for love. So that's how I know people mm-hmm. love me, is they throw money at me. So we, as youngsters, we get all kinds of different stories from different people, maybe our ethnicity, maybe our religion, maybe our community, mm-hmm. Maybe the political system tells us what we should be thinking about money. And so we make observations, even if mom and dad don't say anything specific, we notice, oh, they never talk about money, so I will never talk about money, right? And we start to pick up these subtle nuances of what we should believe about money, and we create what we think is the truth, when in reality is what we're doing is creating a story that we've held on to and we just haven't checked it out.
So, okay, we've got a Twitter question coming. How do we make these changes? It sounds simple, but I've tried before. And that's from Pamela.
So, okay, so how do we do that? Well, the first thing is we have to be willing to change, which means we have to be willing to be uncomfortable. And we have to be willing to do a little research and a little of tracing our history. So we have to be willing to be uncomfortable. For me, when I work with people, I'll ask them, are you willing to make this commitment? Are you, is your intention there that you're going to really explore this and stay in the uncomfortableness? And then are you willing to be in your integrity and be honest about, like, what's going on? Where are you spending the money when we start to look at this stuff? Are you willing to really walk the talk, even though it's really uncomfortable? And so once you're willing to say, I want to make a change, I'm willing to be uncomfortable, and I'm setting the intention to make conscious choices about what I do with my money, then you can make that change. Because as long as you stay in your story, you're going to stay in your story. So a lot of people will come in and tell me, oh, I'm so broke, or I need a new TV. And they don't need a new TV. They might like a new TV. They might desire a new TV, but it's not a life or death situation. So I work with people on their languaging to actually speak more of the truth rather than reaffirm their story. And once you can start to stop saying, I'm broke, and change that to, I like to spend my money on frivolous things, or I don't like to save for the future, then at least you're picking up an element of truth that you can then start to deal with and make different conscious decisions. And then even if you still want to sabotage yourself financially, I say just do it consciously so that you can't be a victim and say, look what people did to me. No, I chose to blow my money on bingo instead of putting money into the college fund, or I chose to pay off, chose not to pay off my credit card debt because I really wanted to go on this spending spree, or I like to travel and I put it on my credit card. So like, until we can start to get to the honest truth.
It's powerful. Yeah. It's a little reveal. It's a personal reveal that you could,
That's right. That's right.
What does that usually do for people, Bob, when you start doing that with people? What I can only imagine that, so I was doing a little bit in my head when you're talking. So what do you usually find? Because I don't think people, I've never thought of doing it with money. I do it with clients and like, well, why are you doing it? At least be honest with, you know, your motivation or why you're doing something. But to do it with money, boy, that really changes things around.
Right.
Because you're acknowledging what the person is, they're having to acknowledge in themselves the actual choice that they're making, or choices.
Yeah, and so, well, what I do when I first start with people, and if I'm in a workshop, I'll have people do it, like, through movement, and we also do journaling and stuff, but I'll ask people to write down or share with a partner, like, what are the money beliefs you held as a child? And then list those out, and then check in with them. Do you still believe those today, or have you had a shift in your beliefs? What did your mom teach you or not teach you about money? What did your dad not teach you or teach you about money? What are your core beliefs? Does gender play a role? For a lot of women, even in this day and age,
it does.
I hear it all the time. They're, you know, oh, I was told to just look for Prince Charming, and I just need to find somebody else to bring me my success.
Yeah.
Or they're taught that, you know, that's, in certain families, that's for the men to do. In other families, that's for the women to do. So, like, depending on where you're growing up and who's giving you the information, gender plays a big role.
What do you do with that? Because that seems so, I agree with you, there's a cultural gender bias.
Right.
That's pretty ingrained. Would you say your work is moving away from that, or is it reframing? What would you do with that?
So
it's
a combination. First of all, it's about getting conscious of what is our story.
Okay.
What's the unconscious roadmap that we're using? Once we're aware of that, then we can decide, gee, does that still serve me, or do I want a different result? Right, because if I know that, like, let's say, for example, I want to go from L.A. to New York. Do I want to take a train? Do I want to drive in a car? Do I want to take a, you know, ride a horse? Do I want to walk? Right, depending on my time frame, depending on my ability, depending on my financial situation, would determine whether I'm going to take a plane, whether I'm going to walk, or what are those things. And so, but maybe I don't really want to go to New York. Maybe I actually really just wanted to go to you know, New Jersey. And well, now I need to make a slight adjustment. And it's the same thing with money. Mm-hmm. If I say that I want to put away money for college, or if I want to save for a car, but I'm actually spending all my money on alcohol, well, then I'm not in alignment with what I'm saying I want. And I'm not saying that, you know, and if you want to go out and buy the alcohol, that's great, but just do it consciously saying I'm choosing this over that. And so it's just, it's really important to get aware of what are these choices that I make, because I don't always make them consciously. It doesn't mean that I may not always have that emotion. Like if I go in, if I go into a store and my credit cards constantly get declined, I may have like heart palpitations. That may always happen. But if I know that this certain thing triggers me, that when I go in and my card gets declined, I don't scream at the clerk and make them wrong. I might say, oh, you know what? You know what? I probably didn't pay the bill, and now I'm not going to take it out on somebody else. Because a lot of times people, when they get in a situation where, why is my bank account overdrawn? I can't believe the bank did this to me. Well, the bank didn't do anything. They just recorded what was happening. So it's really about getting conscious of the choices that we have been making, and then decide whether or not they still serve us by looking at what are really the financial goals that we want to have in the future. Do we want to travel more? Do we want to spend more time with family? Do we want to, you know, have a new house? Do we want, like, whatever those things are, and to really then get in touch. Then once we know what we really, where we want to go, we can make the adjustment. Because if we're, if we have a roadmap that's taken us to New York and we realize we want to go to New Jersey, it's important to know that we're on the wrong roadmap. And we can't adjust it without knowing that.
Wow. So what, you know, got a, another common question coming in about, it's a long email, but I'm going to kind of to paraphrase it. Okay. So one spouse, and you probably see this a lot, one spouse maybe doesn't like to spend as much money, or maybe they like to go out to less expensive restaurants or something, and then the other one, you probably see a lot of that, because it seems to be, a lot of times people seem to be mismatched in that arena.
You know, they are, and there are a lot of people, and it's not necessarily that they're mismatched. You know, I have couples who will come in and say, well, they like to do it this way, and this is the right way. Tell them that's the right way. And I say, there's no right way. There's lots of different ways to do it. What works for you? But the thing is, if I have a couple where one person doesn't like to spend and one likes to spend, I look at that as, that's great. We've got two different takes on how to do this, so that if I'm over impulsively spending my money and my spouse is the one saying, let's don't spend it, well, maybe she's going to help rein me in. And maybe I'm going to then help her to be a little bit more less rigid about every single expenditure. So I say, you know, look at the positives of both people's money perspectives, and then find out how to make that work together. I am constantly surprised at how many couples do not talk about their finances on a regular basis.
Yeah. It's something that
I can't believe you didn't pay the bill.
Yeah. It seems to be something that gets, I agree with you, skip or not on the same page about goals or where they want to go. What do you say for those? Because obviously, to start the conversation, which sounds like a lot of your exercises and work gets people to start talking about it, right?
Get people to start talking, exactly. So what I recommend to couples, my ideal situation is that couples meet on a weekly basis, that they set aside an hour, and they can pick the day and the time, but an hour a week of sitting down and talking about life goals, goals of the week, goals of the month, goals for the rest of the year, and then goals long term. And then actually talk about, hey, looks like we're going to have some excess money this month. Do we want to put that into savings, or do we want to take that trip we were talking about? Or is it going to go into the college fund? Or is it going to, you know, go to buy some antiques or whatever it might be? So to sit down on a weekly basis, that's my preference. At a minimum, I think couples should sit down at least once a month, review the spending, look at the credit card statements, look at the bank statements, and then, again, talk about, hey, what are our goals? What are we trying to accomplish? And if it's just to, you know, maintain a great state of being and not doing any traveling, then that's it's fine. There's no right or wrong answer. But, again, it's tapping into what do I think my life purpose is here? What is it that I want to accomplish while I'm here? And how can I do it more consciously instead of just leaving everything to chance so that I can look back and go, oh, my gosh, look what happened in my life, as opposed to, gee, look what I made happen.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing from you, it sounds like the awareness and accountability mm-hmm. seems to be really integral to making the changes.
Absolutely. It's absolutely, okay. Because if you're not conscious and intentional in your decision making, you're not going to have the outcome that you want. Mm-hmm. You may have a dream or a goal that may not be reachable, but if you don't at least get conscious of what it is and try to figure out what you need in terms of tools to get there, it's for certainly sure not going to happen if you're not at mm-hmm. least looking at it.
Mm-hmm. One thing you talk about, I've got so many questions for you. First of all, let's talk about the title of the book, mm-hmm. Money Nerve. Why money nerve? What is a money nerve? What is, it sounds like, ooh, it could be a little painful. What is it?
Well, you know, it is. I mean, here's the thing. A lot of people have physical ailments related to money stress. People have heart attacks. People jump out of buildings. People, you know, hold stuff in their stomach or their belly. And so the money nerve was really about, because we can actually physically feel, you know, if somebody screams at you that, you know, you didn't pay your bill. Why didn't you pay your mortgage? Mm-hmm. We're going to come after you. We have a physical reaction of, oh, my God, I've been bad, or, oh, my gosh, I've been found out, or I've been shamed. So there is a physical reaction in the body. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer. I do a lot of work with core energetics, and we talk about how trauma and emotions are stored in our body. And so the money nerve to me was just the appropriate, you know, verbiage in really talking about how it's physically in us, that we do have that heart palpitation or the emotional stress, or, you know, some people age quicker than others because there's so much stress going on. So that's really where the money nerve came from, is because we do feel it in our bodies when we have these negative reactions to interacting with money and other people.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that is so true. It is, and it is. You're right. It's visceral. It really, it's not just a mental, emotional, but there's a physical and physiological component to it as well. Now, something you talk about too is this mental map. If you can go into a bit of what is a mental map, and then how would one do it and use it, I guess.
Yeah, so to me, you know, the mental map is really our conscious or unconscious roadmap of how we live our life. And so, right, so I may say that I want to be really healthy and fit, but every chance I get, I'm eating, you know, potato chips, or I'm eating a candy bar. And so my talk and my walk are not the same. So the mental map is, what are those roads that we're taking ourselves down, whether it's conscious or unconscious, mm-hmm. and so that I can really take a look at, you know, if I keep saying I want to, again, it's that New York mm-hmm. versus New Jersey. You know, I keep saying I want to go to New Jersey, but my map says I'm going to New York. And if I don't start to become aware of, oh, I always say I like to save money, but every chance that I see that there's an extra $500 in my bank account, I get it right back to where I'm comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. A lot of people have a balance that works for them. So, you know, somebody that's used, you know, I like $3,000 in my bank account. So when it gets to four, I blow $1,000. Or some people like to be right at zero, you know.
Yeah.
And
I've seen that. What is that? I actually had a client years ago, a trader, and but guess what? He could make $30,000, you know, in a day, you know, or whatever, a few minutes, 40. But the, his thing was 40 grand, and then he would lose it back to 10, 15, 5,000, and up again. And it was that number, and it went right to that number, right to that number.
You know,
what do you make of that? What is,
well, it's, you know, it's funny that at a certain point, I think at a certain point, people sort of get the sense that, you know what, this is always the amount that's going to be in my bank account. And I can either live with it or I can't, but I'm comfortable with it. And
the
what
comfort,
happens
okay.
is, you know, it's funny. I see this with people that inherit money. They'll inherit money and they'll say to me, oh my gosh, I inherited $400,000 and I blew through it in a year. Right, because it really wasn't your money, because you know what your money should be, so you just blew it on frivolous stuff instead of actually saying, wait, I have an opportunity here. What do I want to do with it? We just go back to that unconscious, let me get it back to my 40,000 or let me get it back to my 3,000. And it's very unconscious, but it's very comfortable. You know, so, you know, if you have a parent who always told you, you know, don't ever get a refund from the government because they're keeping your money. Well, then, you know, you might have that same mindset. You're going to pick up that mindset because, you know, you don't want to disagree with your parents. We love our parents. We want to affirm whatever they tell us. So we latch on to some of their stories and make them our truth to show them, look, I'm with you. I agree. So a lot of that gets implanted early on of what that number is. You know, I was talking to a client the other day, and it was so funny. She was explaining to me that she inherited a whole bunch of money when she turned 18, like massive amounts of money. She said, you know, it was so great that I was able to inherit all that because I really hated relying on my mom and dad and having to ask them for money. So it was just really nice to be able to get, you know, this few million dollars in, and then I didn't really have to bother them anymore. Right. But that's her mindset. You know, at 18, I get a few million bucks, and then I don't have to rely on mom and dad. We don't all have, you know, 10 million coming our way at 18, but, you know, but it was interesting. That was her point of view. It wasn't that she wasn't in, you know, it was just, that's, you know, when you turn 18, you get millions of dollars.
You get millions of dollars. Yeah. So it really is. Okay. So it's a mindset, which sets some belief.
Right.
And let me ask you, do you find working with people that mindset can be, obviously, it can be changed.
For sure. Well, it definitely can be changed. For a lot of people, you know, it's amazing how many people just don't want to deal with numbers. I shared this in the book, but I had a client come to me one day, and he said, you know, I was actually more upset about coming to see you today than I was about finding out if I had terminal cancer yesterday. And I was like, wow. So a lot of people have created these stories that, if I know the truth about my financial situation, you know, I'll be devastated. It's life or death. If people find out that I'm not perfect, it's, you know, we're so, a lot of this money stuff is tied to our ego. I want to look better than the Joneses. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't like the Joneses. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't want to be like the Joneses.
Yeah. Wow. That's so true. So you're really, Jeff, and I love it. I mean, I love that it's the confronting at the conversation, get that started. Mm-hmm. And the accountability and looking, in a way, it sounds like you're also asking people to look at, well, what do you really, not just believe, but what do you really value? You know, kind of sorting that out.
Absolutely.
So, Bob, so we've got your, you know, the book here, which is great. Then what do you, the money nerve, how else, just we have another question of your website. So, how do you usually work with people? Is it just group? Is it one-on-one?
I do both. I do a lot of workshops. I'm actually probably, the dates haven't been finalized, but at the end of October, I'm going to be in Toronto doing a couple of workshops. I'm going to be in Denver doing a workshop. I'm working on one in Santa Fe and in Philadelphia. But basically, I work in groups or I work with individuals. I enjoy both. The nice thing about working in a group is it gives everybody else an opportunity to witness that they're not the only one, which I really like group work just in general, because it gives people an opportunity to see that they're not alone. Mm-hmm. And there's something about outing yourself in terms of your financial shame in front of other people to actually start to heal that. But I also mm-hmm. do one-on-ones, and I do it either via Skype or I do it, you know, in person, and we'll do exercises. I do visualizations. I have people journal. I have different exercises that end up triggering things in people. And so just doing those different in a workshop, what I'll do is I'll have people walk around and emulate, you know, a rich person or emulate a poor person. Mm. And, you know, you'll see these caricatures of, you know, rich people are greedy, but you mm-hmm. want to be rich. Oh, oh, mm-hmm. yeah. Right? So we have all these contradictions. Poor people are lazy. Rich people are evil. Yet we want to mm-hmm. be them. And so starting mm-hmm. to, you know, get people aware of that or feeling it in their body or just to feel the judgment looking, you know, mm-hmm. Being a better than person, looking down at somebody else. And people really can feel the energy when I have them walking around and just really, you know, over dramatizing the emotions or the feelings and the judgments. And people are just amazed at how like strong it feels in their body. We, you know, we'll do this exercise with a pillow, give it to me, it's mine, I want it. And I've had people literally say, I was ready to punch them in the face. I didn't even know I had that much anger and aggression. Right? So it's just starting mm-hmm. to discover that and yeah. go, wow, I didn't know that was going on. That's all below the surface. Because, mm-hmm. you know, when we're meeting our friends, we're all smiles and life is great. The job's perfect. Bank account's fine. And inside we're like, oh, my mm-hmm. God, I don't know if I'm going to pay the mortgage. My car's going to be repossessed. I've spent the kids' college money. Right? And But yeah. outside we're smiles. We're all smiles. Don't let them find out.
Exactly. Now, do you find, so would that be kind of the repressed anger or something? Or because of not really being oneself, not being able to express this, would that cause that kind of
think the anger comes from a couple things. One, I think a lot of people don't admit that they are jealous or envious, right? Because that's not very, spiritual. That's not very, you know, good people don't do that. So a lot of times we don't acknowledge some of our darker emotions. And just because we're envious doesn't mean we want something bad to happen to other people, but we, you know, certainly we're not going to say, gosh, I'm so jealous of you.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, but we just tend to not do that. So, you know, for some people there's anger there, and other people are mm-hmm. saying, well, you know what? You know, my family was really wealthy, and then my dad got into gambling. He lost all of our
yep.
money. So I'm really angry because that was my money. Right? So everybody's story is a little bit different, but, you know, there might be anger at, why can't I just have somebody give me everything because I don't want to have to work for it? And we may all have a little bit of that, and to be able to admit yep. that, you know, gee, I'd love for somebody to just pay all my bills and I could just lay at the beach all day. That'd be fun. For a while, I'd probably get bored, but right. But we think that that sounds attractive,
mm-hmm.
and so we make up all these.
Well, part of what
head,
I mean, part of what I'm hearing you saying too is very often that perhaps that jealousy can show you what you want, but
right.
but why aren't you doing it? Why are you sabotaging? Why are you not doing it? Now, do you go into that with the work that you do? Does the why come up? In other words, pointing out, you know, somebody's wanting something, or like you said earlier, making the certain goals, but then they seem not to, you know, they're making decisions that are counter to the goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is important to, you know, figure out, and you may not always have to know the why, but at least if you understand why. I mean, if you understand, okay, this is what I do. I self-sabotage whenever I start to get visibly successful. I self-sabotage because I don't want to have to, I don't want to have to be accountable. I don't want to be seen. I don't want to have conflict. I don't want people to make me a target because now I'm more visible. I look more successful. So I don't necessarily have to understand why I don't want that, as long as I am aware that that's what happens. Because It's great to get to the why, but it's not absolutely necessary, right? I don't have to know why I was traumatized as a child. If I'm aware of the trauma, then I know what I can do in my current life to minimize the trauma, even if I never really understand why the initial trauma happened.
Mm-hmm. So really, it sounds like it's really going to the belief or the issue, you know, how one is acting, kind of like the belief I'm hearing, or the mental map is like a blueprint, and you're or a map, and you're operating off of that instead of perhaps what you're saying you consciously want.
Right, exactly. Because, you know, it's funny. I remember when I was working with my first editor, we were talking about, I said, you know, everybody has emotions around money or belief systems around money. She said, oh, that's not true. I don't have any issues with money. I'm pretty low-key about it. I said, okay, well, let me ask you this. I said, you have a sister, a mom, and a dad. When you go to the lunch with all three of them, is it the same experience? She said, oh, well, no. When I go out to lunch with my dad, he pays because I'm his princess. When I go out with my mom, I pay because I feel bad because my dad left her. And when I go out with my sister, we pay equally because we're on equal footing. I said, oh, okay, so see right there, you have three different scenarios with three different people just on how you pay for lunch. And she went, oh, my God.
Wow.
Right.
So, yeah, it would be based on belief. Yeah, on her belief. Right. Yeah, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, would you her as an example, would you want somebody to keep that? Would they have different scenarios, or would it be better to have one all the way across the board?
No, it's okay to have those three scenarios. But it's important to know that, because if we know that in her belief system that single moms are more likely to be a victim and she needs to save them, well, then she may end up finding herself with friends that remind her of her mom's relationship. She may end up going in and trying to save her or fix that person because they're just like my mom. Mm-hmm. They need saving.
Mm-hmm.
And in other relationships, somebody might think that she's going to come in and save them, and she's looking at them thinking, well, you're just like my sister. We're on equal footing. I ain't giving you a dime. Right? So it's going to play into the other relationships, because she's just going to recreate the mom and dad and sibling in other, you know, friendships and in a workplace. So just being aware that, oh, I like, you know, for her to be aware that, oh, older men are always supposed to treat me like a princess, so men have to take care of me. That's important to note, because she'll say, oh, I'm very independent, except when my dad, because he's supposed to take care of me because that's his job, right? So that's a belief. And if her dad doesn't believe that, they're going to have some conflict when she's expecting him to treat her like the little princess, and he's saying, well, you're an adult now. I don't have to treat you like the little princess.
Wow, Bob, it's so far-reaching. It really, I mean, it's amazing. It is just amazing how it sounds like the belief in that it goes completely throughout one's life and relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Money is just a doorway to how we live the rest of our life. I do an exercise with a dollar bill. And so let's say I've got 20 people, 10 people across from each other. And I give a couple people a $1 bill. One person gets a $100 bill. A couple people get a 20 and a 50, and I mix it all up. Well, I thought it would just be this interesting little exercise. Well, it turned out that the person on the other end of the line knew what everybody else had. Everybody was aware of what everybody else had, even though we weren't directly looking at each other's money. People felt less than when they had the dollar bill. One woman felt like she had nothing to offer the man that she was actually attracted to standing across from her. So for her, it was sexuality. It was like all these things came up. People didn't deserve to have the $100 bill. Why did they get it? Why did somebody else get it? Oh, well, at least I got the 50. I didn't get the $5 bill. It was amazing how much was unconsciously picked up by all the different participants when I thought it was going to be this basic, simple exercise. And there's so much that came out of it. And it's I love doing that exercise, because people are always amazed at how much emotion comes up just looking at a dollar bill versus a $100 bill.
Wow. So it really taps into the worth it sounds like, and then whether somebody feels something is being done to them.
Right.
You know, so impacting. Now, where does the, what is it, the core energetics come in? Do you that also with your participants or clients as well?
Yeah, so for me, they go hand in hand, and so I started doing core energetics or radical aliveness is the school that I went to out in Southern California. And basically what that helps me to do is get people to embody what's going on around their money. We really do, body work, feel into things, hit, move energy to really sort of connect with that money part of us that we have really ingrained in our body. So the core energetics really helps me to get people to a lot of times people say, I'm so confused. When I get to money, I'm so confused. Well, if you weren't confused, what might you be feeling? Oh, fear. Oh, judgment. Oh, lack of self-worth. So the core energetics and the therapy aspect really helps me to go a little bit deeper with people, because it sometimes triggers some really traumatic stuff that happened to people as children around money that they've had just buried. And when that stuff comes up, it's so amazing and so powerful. I love this. I mean, it's tax returns are fine, but this is a lot more interesting and impactful, because I can see when people have that aha moment and a light goes off and they realize, oh my gosh, I've been working off this false premise for the last 20 years.
And God, how freeing. And I love what you said about other relationships being impacted of what you not only look for, but expect within the context of that relationship. So that script, which makes sense because the triggering is there, that script will be automatically running.
Right.
Unless you and if you know it. Yeah.
Exactly. And at least if you know the script is running, you can say to the other person, hey, I have this silly script I keep running that you have to take care of me. So I'm just putting it out there to remind you that when I do silly things, you can remind me that I'm working on my unconscious script of that you have to take care of me. So then at least the other person can say, oh, I'm actually okay with that, or yeah, good to know, because I'm not going to be doing that for you.
Yeah. I think that's so important with any relationship, but especially couples, I think, to say, look, this is what I, are you into that or not, or can you do that?
Right.
And then if they can, or, find out where those defining points are. Now, do you still do any of the accounting as well? Or you're bringing that in? Oh, you do. I love that.
No, I do both. I have accounting practice with a full staff, and we do taxes and tax planning and budgeting. And then I also do money counseling and coaching. So do it all.
This has just been so amazing. And I really say that. I've been tweeting and putting on Facebook, and I think people really need to get your book. I mean, I have so many guests on, and people, the ones that I say that at the end of the interview, I really, really, really mean it. But I think you've just uncovered, as Tamara's putting, Pandora's box.
But you have
to wait to get out of Pandora's box, and
absolutely
to navigate it and see what's in there, to see what's in Pandora's box. But Bob, this is just phenomenal. I absolutely admire you and love the work that you're doing. I just think it's not only so needed and it's so needed and necessary. But it also sounds like a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. It's amazing.
Untangle all this.
Absolutely. And it's, we need to stop judging ourselves so badly and actually give ourselves a break and look at all the wonderful things we have in our lives and come from a place of gratitude, from my perspective.
I so agree. Thank you so much for being on Awakenings with Michelle Mache. I so appreciate you taking the time to come on the program, and you have an open door to come back, and any workshops or anything you ever have going on, just email the producer and we'll give you a shout out about that.
Beautiful. Absolutely.
I've learned a lot today. I've learned a lot.
That's great. I love this conversation, because it's so many people live in fear of this, and it's just so, I just want everybody talking about their money so that they can just let go and be free.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a great example, not only of like a hybrid career creating that, but with your passion and purpose, but a soul entrepreneur that you're, you know, truly living your soul's purpose and having a good time with it, living abundantly, helping others. I mean, it's just wow, really nice to come across you on the path. So thanks again for being on the program.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Okay. All right, and that awakening conversation was with Bob Wheeler, who is the author of The Money Nerve, Navigating the Emotions of Money. And you can find out more information about Bob Wheeler and his private consultations, as well as his group work and workshops at themoneynerve.com. Again, that's themoneynerve.com, and that was Bob Wheeler. Wow, on fire. Did I so love that conversation. We got people in the chat. Can't wait to hear the rest of the episode. This is a fantastic segment, wonderful show, amazing information. I agree. What a gem. Anyway, I'd pick up that book. I mean, geez, look at that. Who knew Snicker bars reflected where you are financially, but it all makes sense, doesn't it? And we all make sense of what we're going through every Wednesday here at 12 p.m. Pacific time. As always, keep shining your light, sharing your insight, and of course...
Awakenings broadcasts every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time. Archive shows are available on iTunes. For continued Awaken conversation and insights, join the Awakenings group on Facebook and visit Michelle's blog at soulinsightsforspiritledliving.com. That's soulinsights, 4, spiritledliving.com. Keep awake.